Okay. Here we are at the end of the first season of a Star Trek show in over 10 years. Star Trek Discovery is done until 2019. We will talk all about how we feel about the season, how we feel about these last six episodes. But the way that I want to start off talking about Star Trek Discovery's first season is to get really kind of reductive and to really get very, very into some very basic information about how storytelling works. Because I had... Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
Because I had a kind of what felt to me like a profound realization about why Discovery just isn't working for me and continues to not work for me.
Okay.
And it's for this reason that basically I feel like television, you know, narrative television in general and storytelling in general works in kind of two different ways. You come up with a story and then you come up with a setting to tell that story in, or you come up with a setting and you then come up with stories to tell in that setting. And all the previous Star Treks were setting first. TOS was setting first. TNG was setting first. DS9, Voyager, Enterprise. Star Trek Discovery is the first Star Trek series that is story first. The show has no setting aside from a generic Star Trek is the setting of this series. And I think that's why it's so unsatisfying to me.
Yeah, the Discovery isn't a character in the way that the Enterprise is a character in... it's a means to an end. It's a tool. It's certainly a very important one, but it's not... You don't get the sense of the Discovery being home or being symbolic of something larger in the same way that you do about, for example, Voyager being their one bastion of home in a very different area of the quadrant. I mean, that's the and even beyond that, you know, it's not like we have, you know, DS9 has a very strong setting, even though it has a very strong plot coming out of that setting. Yeah,
because I don't know what the second season of Star Trek Discovery is going to look like. I think that if you look back at all the previous Star Treks, or you look back at television series in general, you know, so I'm rewatching Mad Men right now, and you could kind of argue that it's a story first show, because in a lot of ways the first season of Mad Men is about this kind of mystery of who Don Draper is, and it's revealed at the end of the season who he is and kind of his origin. But at the same time, it also really does come from a place of the setting is the 1960s in America, and what kind of stories can we tell in that context? You know, the story of Don Draper would not be nearly as interesting if Mad Men had been set in 1995, right?
And I mean, I could see an interesting story about advertising agencies in the 1990s, but it would be a very different story. Yeah, because that setting creates the setting creates the character. Don Draper is a paragon of his setting, and this is what is what is happening to him is the stand-in for what is happening to the setting.
Yeah, exactly. And in a similar fashion, I think that you can see in Mad Men how the second season and all the rest of the seasons, once you got to that, you know, the 13th episode of the first season of Mad Men, which I coincidentally watched last night, everything's revealed. You know, you find out who Don Draper is. The mystery is solved. You're not left with this feeling of now what? Because there's still all these other characters and you're still very early in the 1960s and you still have an idea about where the show could go. I frankly have no idea where Star Trek Discovery can go because I don't know what this show is about. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what the setting of this show is because the first season was really a 15-episode pilot. And while there were things about it I liked and while there were things about it I didn't like, obviously, a lot of people have been sort of complaining or sort of validating this idea. You know, we'll talk about the final scene of, you know, Will You Take My Hand, the season finale of this show, because I think that without that scene, I don't think anyone would really care.
Yeah.
What was coming next on Star Trek Discovery.
It seems like a very blatant, oh shit, we, you know, nobody is going to tune into season two unless we say, but you're going to see the Enterprise. And then so we all dutifully are going to say, all right, I'll bite. What's going on with the Enterprise at this point? What's going on there? And that vague curiosity is the closest that we have to a teaser of that. But I actually want to go back to what you said about 15-episode pilot, because so you didn't see the recent Westworld, did you?
No, I didn't.
Okay. Well, to me, that felt...
I saw like the first three episodes, okay. And then I was like, I can see what kind of show this is going to be, and I don't have any interest in it.
Well, in a lot of ways, and I'm spoiling Westworld season one, but at the end of the season, you know, the bulk of the season is giving some character backstories and finding out some secrets and mysteries and character interaction and who's really who and hidden agenda, you know, that which you kind of figured it would be about. At the end of the season is when the robots start to revolt and they start attacking the humans in the park. And that's pretty much where the season ends. And it feels like a prologue to the larger story of, okay, here's Westworld during and after this revolt of these robots, and what does that mean? And that being the story that it really wants to tell, which is not to say that the prologue season was uninteresting in its own right. It was a very strong season of television. It just feels like the appetizer for the larger story, but we have an idea where season two is going to go. It's okay that it's a prologue because now we know the story it's going to tell. I felt fine about the first two episodes of Discovery being a prologue, a two-part pilot in a way, to the real story, which I thought at the time was The Adventures of Michael Burnham on Discovery, and it's week after week, and she's going to solve the Klingon War, which in a way it kind of was, but that felt pretty effective at that point. All right, we have two episodes which is setting up the situation, setting up the backstory. This character of Michael Burnham does have a lot more weight on her shoulders at this point than any previous Star Trek main character kind of had. And we need this time to get into who she is. And now we're at the real story at 6 months later kind of thing.
Yes, but that's not really what we got.
Yes, and that was the problem for me.
Right, because I think that at this point, you know, we have finished the first season. So, you know, I struggle with this because there's a lot of different directions that we can talk about the first season of Discovery. But I think that the thing that I keep coming back to is, okay, this series is essentially a soap opera, and I am not being I'm not being critical of soap operas. They're many shows that are like soap operas that I love that are soap operas that I love.
Breaking Bad is a soap opera.
Exactly. Right. Like what I mean by a soap opera is a very sort of like emotionally exaggerated style of storytelling, a melodrama that features a lot of shortcutted surprises in order to elicit an emotional connection on the part of the audience. It's a particular way of making television, and I don't have a problem with it. I don't think Star Trek Discovery is a particularly good example of a soap opera, but that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, and I would also argue that soap operas are very character-focused, and we talk about series that are very soap opera-ish. Again, Game of Thrones is a soap opera because it is all about these, you know, the emotional reactions of these characters in this particular situation. Now, of course, that situation happens to be a medieval civil war, but, you know, Mad Men's a soap opera in that same way.
Yeah, exactly. But I think that, I mean, I would not argue that Mad Men's a soap opera necessarily, but that's beside the point. But I do think that with Discovery, the major issue for me, besides this idea of, okay, I don't necessarily like this story, and there's nothing else that the show is giving me.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know what this show is about, because what it's about is about this story. Does this story work for you or not? If it doesn't work for you, you're not going to like the entire first season, which I think is a problem.
Yeah.
But not to cut you off, I think that the other part of it that is even more damning about Star Trek Discovery is not did I like this story, but was it actually good at telling the story it wanted to tell? And I would argue, no, it wasn't very good at telling the story it wanted to tell. It took a lot of shortcuts. It did not have as much of a ability to communicate to the audience what it was doing it hid information from the audience in a way that felt unearned, frankly. And I'm speaking specifically of the, you know, Voke Tyler reveal and the Lorca is actually from the Mirror Universe reveal. This entire season has these very large moments that pull the rug out from the rest of this, you know, what we've seen in the previous episodes. And I don't know that that's a good way to build your show. If I can't trust what you're telling me, I'm going to find it increasingly difficult to care about anything that you're telling me.
You know, one of the things you say about Voyager a bunch of times is, if you don't like Voyager, wait a season or two and it'll become a different show. And I kind of felt that way with Discovery, except it's wait an episode or two. Like, it doesn't... It seems like the premise switches up a bunch of times in a way that... I mean, this is a... I don't feel like any of the particular subplots that they tried to get through in this season had enough time to bake, you know? Like, when you're cooking, you don't just vigorously stir. You need to just let it sit for a while sometimes and heat up. It just seemed like every time we get a new stasis, it's pulled out from under, and... So as a result, I don't get time to know these characters. I don't get time to know this setting. I don't get time to know this premise and think about its implications because it's really looking to move to the next thing.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with all of that. And I think that it's very instructive to see, like, the characters that we started the series out with. You know, let's talk about Captain Georgiou, gone by the end of the second episode. Lorca, gone. Tyler, apparently gone, but I guess not, because I guess there's been talk online from the creative staff that he actually is not gone, and I just have to roll my eyes at that.
He'll appear there. She'll meet with him a couple of times, because now, of course, the Federation and the Klingons are dealing with some kind of treaty thing, and he'll be back in some kind of ambassadorial role, and it will be all this drama for Michael to have and to deal with again, because now they're working together as ambassadors.
But, like, there's too much going on here, and the show was not consistent in explaining why any of it felt important. It was very good at telling, not very good at showing. And I think it's instructive to think about sort of some of the things that I don't really see the point of. You know, the Voke and Ash Tyler stuff, I don't get it. I frankly fundamentally do not understand the motivations of Laurel, the motivations of Voke, the motivations of the Klingons here. I think because I just don't know, because I don't think that the show has made this sort of you know, symbolic link between any of these characters clear. I think that they were going for some sort of metaphorical link between the mycelial network, the spore drive, and sort of the impermanence of identity or something like that, right? That if you boil this entire season down to its basis elements, I think this really was a season about identity, about who you are, about what you are looking at, what you are looking for, how you are reacting to situations, you know, who you are, right? Burnham, who is she?
All the characters.
Voke, Ash Tyler, who is he? Lorca, who is he? Who are any of these people? And time and time again, though, I think that it took that too literally. You know, Lorca is actually not Lorca. He's another version of Lorca. You know, Tyler is actually not a human at all. He's a Klingon. It was too much.
Yeah, I mean, saying it in that sense makes me, it feels... It's at once the kind of theme and presentation of that theme that feels very adolescent, you know, in the way that, you know, that's the kind of thing if you wrote it when you were 20, it would actually be really clever. But, you know, these are television professionals and so. But on the other hand, again, that's not necessarily themes that I think are bad to put out in the world. And if they need to be made simple in order for people to get it, I guess I understand that reasoning. Does that make any sense? I mean,
it does, but we're talking about Star Trek.
I know. I guess what I mean more is that saying, like, that it feels harmless, but at the same time, you're right. Like, it should be more than that.
Yeah, it really does feel like they were. I mean, look, I sound very down on Discovery. This is certainly not the Star Trek show that I was expecting or hoping for. I think that it has fundamental problems, and I'm not entirely clear that the showrunners or writers or creative staff or producers have any sort of understanding about what those criticisms are. I'm not optimistic about season two fixing any of these issues. I will be more than pleased to be wrong. But for me, it just appears that maybe the people making this show just aren't that good at this.
I mean, I'll be
like, I don't know. I really try to give people the benefit of the doubt, and maybe I'm hoping that a lot of the creative turmoil behind the scenes with Brian Fuller's departure, which we also need to talk about because there's updated information about that, but like maybe it's that, right? And maybe these people actually are very good and on top of things.
Yeah.
And once they have a you know, pre-production season two that they are completely in control of from start to finish, and we get season two and it is wonderful, I will be happy to eat these words. But as it stands right now, Star Trek Discovery is a very, very flawed television show that, you know, I've seen people compare it and say, well, it's better than season one of TNG. Well, season one of TNG is not anything to compare anything to. It is an abysmally bad, you know, a season of television.
But again, I understand what season one of The Next Generation was trying to do. If it didn't quite have, I mean, it wasn't quite sure how to tell stories in its own voice yet. The characters hadn't quite gelled. The actors hadn't quite figured the characters out. You know, things like that. But I think it had a clearer idea of what kind of show it was going to be than Star Trek Discovery does. Again, by the end of season one of The Next Generation, I knew this was going to be a show about where the Federation is, you know, the paragon of what we aspire to be, and here is the flagship of it, and here is the Federation encountering weird situation and trying to wrestle their way through these moral dilemmas. I mean, in a lot of ways, Star Trek, you know, Next Generation is concerned with morality in these ways, and then it refines that into more character-based stories on that on those themes, but it still kind of stays in that wheelhouse. I still don't know what exactly Discovery was trying to be about.
Yeah, I don't either. And I think that, you know, for me, it all comes down to this idea that Brian Fuller said that there was something that was talked about but never seen in TOS. And that has turned out to be, I guess, the origins of the Klingon Federation sort of Cold War idea, right? That you saw in the original series and then leading up to the Undiscovered Country. Okay,
is
fine.
That something that we all were curious about?
I mean, no.
Like, I think we just kind of assumed for the same. It was for the same reason that we were in a Cold War with Russia, you know, and that's pretty much all I needed to know about it.
I mean, sure, but I mean, I don't even want to really like criticize that. I mean, I think that people should tell the story that they want to tell. And the thing is, like, if they can figure out an interesting way to tell it that is entertaining and interesting and thought provoking, then I'm on board with it. You know, they could decide that they want to explain anything about Star Trek, and as long as it's a good story and as long as I like the characters and I like the show, I think that it's fine. But to me, a lot of this has to be blamed on Brian Fuller. I think that he had a very particular idea about what he wanted to do with Star Trek. I don't know if this is a matter of interpretation. I don't know if this is a matter of him biting off more than he can chew. I don't know what the answers to these questions are, because it's really hard for me to see behind the scenes. I have no real information about this. I can only go by what I see on screen, and what I see on screen is a little bit of a mess.
Yeah, again, it does feel like the kind of show that had part of the reason that I think it does feel so scattered is because there is no clear creative voice behind the show. There is no, you know, it seems almost, I mean, it's very easy to imagine that this is a kind of, you know, when one person writes the first line of a story, then the second writes it, because again, you have Brian Fuller starting this, a different team picking it up, and suddenly they're telling a story they're not quite interested in, but they still have to see that to a conclusion, or else it won't be remotely narratively satisfying, and yet trying to tell other stories, but maybe no clear idea of what those other stories are going to be.
Yeah. I mean, well, I have two thoughts about that. I think number one, of course, is that this idea for Star Trek Discovery, this concept of the story itself, was developed when Brian Fuller had pitched Star Trek Discovery as an anthology. And
yeah,
I think that you can really see that in this story, that if this was a one season anthology and next season they were going off to a post the motion picture, you know, pre-TNG sort of story or something like that. That makes a lot of sense.
Picking and choosing
a lot of sense because
different eras of the Federation's history. Yeah.
Yeah, that was his original idea, as I understand it. And so I think that looking at it that way, can totally see how Star Trek Discovery worked on that level. This is not a television series with a setting, an ongoing setting that can, you know, go for 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 seasons. This is a story. This is a plot. And it doesn't work because this is supposed to be an ongoing television series. I mean, I might actually be more inclined or be more charitably feeling towards Discovery if this was an anthology.
Yes.
And you could say, okay, like, was this story satisfying? Did we get something out of this? I mean, I would probably argue no still. But, and then the other part of that is that to pick up on what you said about, like, it feels like, you know, this is someone who wrote the first line of a story and then someone wrote the second line of a story. This is one of my, like, hallmarks. This is one of my bugaboos. I beat this drum all the time. But this kind of very intensive, very intertwined, serialized narrative storytelling on a narrative television show is extraordinarily difficult to pull off well. I frankly can't think of many shows that have ever pulled it off all that well. Because the American style of writing television is you have a writer's room. All the writers sit around. The showrunners are at the head of the table. They're batting ideas around. They're breaking stories. They're coming up with the overarching plot for the season in a serialized narrative. And then, you know, episodes are assigned out to different writers. And the showrunners are the ones that have to go through these 5 or 6 or 4 scripts that are in development, various stages of development at any one particular time, and make sure that there's a lot of attention to detail, make sure that episodes flow from one to the other, that stories flow from one to the other, that character beats flow from one to the other. This is a very, very difficult thing to do.
Yeah.
And I don't think that there are many people that have that skill set. And this sort of serialized television just does not work on an American writer's room style. You know, I think that you don't see this problem with, say, British television, right? That British television has always worked under the model of one person writes, and those short seasons that are telling a story from, you know, over a season long arc are much more satisfying because it's one person writing it.
Yeah, unless you have a very strong showrunner working these, and the shows that pull off serialization that are a lot more successful do tend to have very strong showrunners working on them and making sure that attention to detail is there. And again, it doesn't seem like that was physically the case on Discovery. Even if they wanted to do that kind of a thing, there was not one. You know, maybe if Brian Fuller had stayed the entire season, and let's pretend he was actually going to work hard on it, if this was a story he wanted to tell, he might have made that consistency to it. But it's not there.
Yeah, I agree with that. So let's talk about the back half of the season then, because, you know, we've spent about a half hour now talking about sort of the series as a whole and television and all this sort of stuff and kind of our main criticisms of the season as a whole. But the one thing that does give me hope for season 2 of Discovery is that in general, the back half of the season was a lot better than the front half of the season.
Yeah. Maybe there was a sense of, yeah, there is a sense of figuring it out a little bit better. It does improve in consistency. But at the same time, I'm not sure if I really... It did kind of blur to me, which again is that is a side effect of serialization that you don't have distinct episodes. There wasn't a magic to make the sanest man go mud moment in this season. There wasn't a Leith in this back half.
That is true. And I do think that kind of the noises that the showrunners are making about the second season being a bit more standalone, mm-hmm. you know, having a bit more like adventures here and there, planetary stuff, et cetera, like that's good. Go with that.
Yeah. And I can maybe that actually might be exciting. You have that gives you the opportunity. Again, the war's over. Discovery is just going to kind of dick around and find things. Some, yeah, you know, maybe they'll meet up with Michelle Yeoh at some point and oh, she's back, and they'll have an episode where they have to go to the trade summit and she meets Ash Tyler again. But for the most part, it's not interested in telling one single story over the season. It's just a bunch of others it could very easily translate in the Next Generation kind of style, with the continuity being a bit more deliberate, and that could be interesting.
Yeah, yeah. I'm hoping that's what they do. I mean, yeah. I'm okay with the serialized narrative. I'm okay yeah. with a season long arc, all these kind of things. I mean, I just don't know if you can get away with a very siloed sort of TNG style of storytelling in this day and age. I'd be very interested in a show out there that tries to do it, and I think you can probably still do it well. That's what the Orville is trying to do, for example. And while the Orville has a lot of problems, And is certainly, I'm not saying that the Orville is a better television show than Star Trek Discovery, because it's not. At least it is trying to do that. Now, the thing is, though, about the back half of Star Trek Discovery is that, you know, four of the six episodes take place in the Mirror Universe. And there's a couple things that I have always found. Well, I'll say this and then I'll talk about the Mirror Universe, or I'll get your thoughts on it, because there's two things going on with Star Trek Discovery criticism, I think. It's either it's people like I don't really like the story that Star Trek Discovery was trying to tell, but if it had done it well, I would go, yeah. You know what? It's not for me, but it was done well and I'm glad people are enjoying it. My problem with Star Trek Discovery is that I don't like the story they're telling. I don't think it was very well executed for large portions of the season. And that is my problem with it, honestly. And I'm still happy that people are enjoying it, but whatever.
Well, I guess...
But I think that go ahead.
Well, I want to say to that point, as a concept, the Dominion War does not interest me, but I was fascinated by DS9. I thought it was a brilliantly told version of that story. I think it's a similar exact point here. I could see a version of the Dominion War. It was told in a way which gave very high stakes to the characters. Everybody was doing something interesting in it. They found interesting things for it to do. They didn't manage to do that for the Klingon War for me.
Yeah, yeah, I would agree with that. But I think that for the back half of the season, for the amount of time that they spent in the Mirror Universe, you know, I liked it. Like, I will say, I think that they did probably the best job with the Mirror Universe since that first episode of DS9 that was in the Mirror Universe. They had a very particular take on it. They treated it deadly seriously, which I appreciate.
Yeah.
I've never seen the Mirror Universe taken seriously before. I mean, the Mirror Universe has always been a bit campy. The Mirror Universe has always been an excuse for people to run around in skimpy clothing and to have evil bisexuals. And they took it seriously. They did a good job with that. I think that the issue for me with the Mirror Universe stuff is that they just don't let themselves, they keep shooting themselves in the foot. They do something very well, and then they have to keep pulling out these ridiculous episode ending twists. And I'm not watching Star Trek for episode yeah. ending twists. I'm watching Star Trek for all of the other stuff that they're doing.
Yeah, as I said, they don't let the episode cook. They just immediately, you know, we're in the Mirror Universe, we're getting used to it, and then bam, Lorca's a traitor and we're out of there. The end. And that's it. And now it's 9 months later and we got to deal with that.
And doesn't it make everyone in the show seem stupid that they never thought that anything was weird with Lorca? I mean, like, okay, yes, we are a Star Trek audience. And so people saying, I think Lorca might be from the Mirror Universe. Obviously, we have knowledge of the Mirror Universe. The characters in the show don't have any knowledge. But, like, aside from Admiral Cornwell, none of them really seem to think that Lorca was odd. And that is a failing to me, I think.
Yes. It goes beyond. They talk about how the one biological difference is that, and we have to deal with this because I don't think that makes any sense, but I'm going with it because that's what's told to me. We're told that the only biological difference is that the Mirror Universe people have more sensitivity towards light, and while Lorca was never, repaired with, while his eyes were never fixed, I don't know, hasn't he been examined? Wouldn't they have noticed something? I don't know. Maybe that's just...
Yeah, yeah. No, I do. I'm with you. I mean, I think a lot of this just seems like they had sort of shock twists that they started with, and then they engineered a way to get there.
Yeah, I mean, Voke and Tyler, that Dr. Ricky Vasquez figures it out eventually, yeah, but doesn't that seem like an oversight that they didn't notice that quicker? I mean, Bashir would have noticed it in his initial scan. The doctor would have noticed that already. Crusher would have noticed that. Pulaski would have immediately realized it upon just scenting him and then just knocked him out and said, well, he's a traitor somehow.
Especially when they had a very easy way to sort of like half hand wave that away. And especially since this is we also will need to talk about the fact that Star Trek Discovery is much more interested in fan service than any previous Star Trek series, which is also kind of annoying me. But like, of all the things that they could ignore, this thing in canon from Enterprise, in the fourth season of Enterprise, that the Klingons looked like humans in TOS because there was some sort of augment virus that was created by a descendant, or a antecedent of Dr. Soong. Like, whatever. It's stupid. No one needed that. When we get to that point in Enterprise, I'm sure we will have a very robust conversation about how stupid it is. But like, it's there. It's in canon. Why do they ignore that? I don't quite get it. And when you are having someone have to appear to be a human and they make these like hand wavy things, like they basically reconstructed his entire body, you're like, what? And then like, Ash Tyler was actually a person? Like, how did they do this? I fundamentally do not understand. Like, did they hollow out Ash Tyler and then like put Voke's head in?
No,
like, I get it.
What I think happened is there was a Nash Tyler, and before he died, they scanned his brain and uploaded it to Voke's brain, and then they completely plastic surgery Voke to look like Ash Tyler, and that's who we have. And for some reason,
but it's more than plastic surgery.
Well, yes,
because they did say that they like cut up his organs.
Yeah, no,
and, like,
removed his second
penis, and like, I don't know.
I'm diminishing for comedic, but that basically it was, yeah, they completely reconstructed him, but they did that to Voke in Voke's body. And I guess what doesn't make sense to me is why they completely suppressed the Voke personality, but it wouldn't be a twist otherwise.
Right, it wouldn't be a twist otherwise, and that's my fundamental problem with the storytelling of Discovery and my storytelling with the entire season, is that all of these twists were where they started, and then they engineered a story to fit into it. And why? Like, why do that? I don't get it. Like,
I think that's the style of storytelling that people want or think they want. I mean, that's it's a notes but not the music kind of understanding of plot-focused television.
Right.
And I think a lot of things are written with certain points in mind, plenty of things are written with the big battle scene in mind, and it could, again, I don't think this was a good story. This story was good at being about what it was about. I think a lot of that is that the connections to the dots weren't strong enough.
Right. I agree with you, because I mean, I think that for me, you know, boiling it down to its barest essence again, the initial conception of the first season of Star Trek Discovery or this story was, let's tell how the Federation and the Klingons, you know, got to where they were in the original series. Was this good for that? Like, was this a good version of that? I don't think so. I mean, there were too many elements here. If you're going to tell that story, tell that story. Why fit the Mirror Universe into it? Why is the captain of Discovery, the hero ship of the series, actually from the Mirror Universe? Why, you know, like, I don't, why is this spore drive thing in it? What is the purpose of any of this? And now they're saying, oh, there's a mystery behind the green fleck that landed on Tilly. I'm like, Jesus fucking Christ.
Behind the what? Stop?
There was this, like, the very telegraphed thing, a green fleck of a spore landed on Tilly's shoulder in, like, one of the episodes. I think it was the second to last episode of the season. And they're saying, oh, watch out for that. That means something. Oh, God. And I'm just like, will you stop, please? Like, all of this stuff is, and the thing was, like, they had nowhere to go with this. They had no resolution to any of this, because the last episode of the season was basically them throwing up their hands and just saying, you know what, this was a Shaggy Dog story, and the end.
Yeah, I mean the ending speech by Burnham, where it's talking about how we have to hold to our principles and all, like, that was lovely, but I don't think that this... Like, it reminds me almost of how He-Man would be a commercial for toys, and then you would slap a moral at the end of it to pretend that it was wholesome entertainment. You know, I didn't feel like this series earned that necessarily. And I would have liked to have seen the season of Discovery that was about us making hard choices in the face of destruction and the fact that we are all... that we can all be vulnerable to fascist thinking, whether or not we believe we can or not we are, and we need to be vigilant and guard against these. I would have liked to have seen that season of television, but this was too much of a Whiplash season to stick to that.
Yeah, because is this a good... Like, if you didn't know anything about Star Trek, would this make any sense to you? And if you know too much about Star Trek, does this make any sense to you? I mean, like, yeah, this would be like if the first season of DS9 was the Dominion War. You know, you need to build something. You need to build characters. Yeah. You can't just drop us into the middle of this thing and have a 15-episode season that features way too much plot, way too many twists, way too much stuff going on. And then the end of the entire season is essentially a wet fart. You know, it was hilarious to me how the show was frankly not interested in coming up with any sort of resolution. They had planned this entire season. They had planned this entire story. And this is the resolution they come up with? I mean, I just have to think that maybe they're just not very good at execution.
I think that's kind of possible. Again, I hope that they... Nothing had a beginning, middle, and ending. It was just kind of there. Whether we're talking about individual episodes or the season. I mean, it felt like everything was a beginning. You know how there are so many... There's a lot of movies. I mean, people said this about The Last Lord of the Rings. Like, it had 10 endings. You think at any point, okay, we can shut it here and we'll be fine. And then it continues another scene. Like, Discovery did that, but with beginnings. Like, it felt like, I felt like every other episode it was changing.
It felt like a Poochie died and went back to his home planet moment. You know, like, what is any of this? I just coming back, like, this is what you plan this entire story out. And this is the resolution of your big war arc. Really? Really? That the leader of the Klingon Empire, Laurel, is what? She's got a bomb? And she's going to blow Kronos up if the Klingons don't unite? Like, this is comic book storytelling.
Yeah, like, nobody's going to shoot her immediately.
Yeah, like, there's so many holes here, and it's just, like, it's insulting to my intelligence that this is what they ended the season on. I mean, leaving aside the fact of, like, the whole, like, oh, the spore drive, they're going to figure out a way to have a non-human pilot for it, blah. And then, of course, they never do, because... you know, we know the support drive doesn't go anywhere. I mean, the USS Enterprise in TNG was not flying around with the spore drive. And so it's just like, why? I mean, I always get to this point when I talk about Discovery where I'm just thinking to myself, you're causing all these problems for yourself, you know, and by yourself, the show, not me. Like,
no,
causing all these problems for yourself, and you just don't have any real idea about what it is you're trying to do. Why is this a Star Trek show?
Yeah, I'm.
There were a lot of moments. I mean. There's another part of it, which is like the show was very good at telling and not showing. You know, the show was very good at Burnham saying, we're Starfleet. We don't do things like that. But what were they doing that was so terrible? Like, I don't get it. You know, I mean, like TNG didn't run around going, we're Starfleet. We don't do things like this. You know, I mean, I don't get it. You know, you show how people act and you show how they do things. And if you want to go outside of that box, if you want to go outside of it and really show people doing really upsetting things, then you have to have some sort of baseline for how you expect them to act in the first place. You know, like In the Pale Moonlight didn't happen in the third season of DS9.
No, I mean, that's actually a perfect thing because In the Pale Moonlight is, compared to blowing up an entire planet, is fairly innocuous, let's face it. And it's one of the again, I was in tears at the end of the episode because it is a character that we have come to know and love over many seasons who has represented, in a way, another version of the paragon of the Federation, which is something that we know and love dearly three, four series in, making a moral compromise that, again, this war is so devastating that this compromise is necessary. And it's a very powerful and tragic moment. And we should feel that way about Cornwall's decision that, okay, this war is so desperate that we can destroy Kronos, but we don't care about her. We don't care about right. her moral culpability. Let me put it this way. I was not going to get upset. The only reason anybody would be upset about Kronos blowing up in this at the end of the season is because then we have to square the circle of canon now. And it probably involves right. time travel.
Right, right. I mean, that was a fan theory about how the entire season was going to end.
Yeah, that was
going
my
to use
idea.
The spore drive to go back in time, you know, 9 months to the Battle of the Binary Stars, and the war would never start. And I'm glad they didn't do that. But because that would have really been like, what the fuck was the point of any of this? I mean, I think I may have actually been so angry at, like, wouldn't have been able to record this podcast. I'd still be in the corner drooling. But the thing is, you're
maybe
right.
Maybe they like originally wrote it that way, and then like somebody happened to see it and was like, "You cannot do this." Like, I really thought that that's where they were going with this. The way that they seem to reverse everything every few minutes.
I mean, that really would have been a Shaggy Dog story if they had done that.
With only Stamets too, like, knowing.
But the thing is, too, that and this is a problem, again, with Discovery's execution, is that, like, even if I don't really care about Cornwell as a character, and I really don't, mm-hmm. I don't really care about anybody as a character besides Tilly, because Tilly is wonderful and she should be the captain next season, she is one of the only, like, she is probably the only thing about the show that I, like, unreservedly love. Like,
yeah, oh,
but
yeah.
That's a side issue. Is that the show, this episode, or this season really, really was focusing on the idea that the Klingon War was this like horrible existential event in Starfleet history, and that the Klingons, I mean, they were like very on track to invade Earth. They were threatened. You know, Starfleet was up against a wall. The war had not been going well. The Federation was essentially about to get wiped out. And this was their darkest moment. And they, you know, were about to betray everything that the Federation was founded on, the ideals of the Federation, et cetera, et cetera. And then, like, you didn't do the work. Like, show your work.
Yeah. Like, again, to go to DS9. Section 31 contemplates, you know, tries to engineer this virus to genocide the Dominion at one point. And this is treated as crossing the moral event horizon. Like, Section 31 was bad. Now we know they're really bad. They are against everything the Federation says. That the Federation is condoning this is terrible. I mean, that was the point of Section 31 was to show the line that could not be crossed. And the power of DS9 was its characters figuring their way out around that. But again, they had sold it to me that the Dominion were the existential event that may or may not warrant betraying everything we stand for, because they are the darkest mirror to the Federation, which if you listen to all our DS9 podcasts, we talked about that a lot.
If you want to go back and listen to a Star Trek series that we both like.
I don't buy that with the Klingons.
No, I don't. And that's the thing. I mean, like, if they had stretched the story out to 5 seasons,
yeah,
maybe it could have worked. Have Discovery be the ship that's going off and doing the adventures. You know, it's the hero ship of this show. And slowly they unfold. The Klingons come back after a period of disappearing or whatever. The war actually starts. You know, it's this long thing. But then again, you've remade DS9. So why do that?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like to a certain degree, I just keep coming back to, yes, but DS9. Yes, but DS9. Yes, but DS9. Like, this show did not do anything that Deep Space Nine did not do better 20 years ago.
Yeah, and it doesn't feel like the show acknowledges DS9 either. Like, doesn't it feel like, and again, this is very personal, this is very subjective, but Discovery feels very self-congratulatory about the way it's telling its story, too. Like, you could just picture it sitting back, like, at the moment it's about, oh, they're never going to see this coming. Wait till they find out the news about Lorca. Ha! They love him, and they don't even know. Like, it's embarrassing? I don't know.
I don't know if embarrassing is the right word, but it's telling, I think. Mm. You know, it's because this feeds into something else that I have found kind of annoying about Star Trek Discovery, is that, you know, this is the Star Trek series that more than any of the others in their first season has really, really been fan servicey. You know, there have been a lot of mentions of previous things. I mean, I think back to like Saru rattling off the captains in that one episode, yeah, or the USS Discovery, or mentioning Captain Archer's visit to Kronos from Enterprise. You know, all these, they mentioned the Enterprise in a previous episode. I mean, the Enterprise appearing at the end of the season finale
with a reference, you know,
there's
to
a
Captain
lot of other
Pike,
things.
Yeah.
That Oh, yeah, the reference to Captain Pike. I mean, there's a lot of things about Star Trek Discovery that feel like a Star Trek series that is just balls to the wall Star Trek fan service. And, like, why?
Harry Mudd.
You know, that's
really
key. That's, like, to sum it all up, because I know we've been talking for longer than either of us wanted to, but surprise, surprise. Like, I just am left with a feeling of deep confusion about Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah.
I don't get it. I don't understand it. I don't know what they're trying to do. I don't know what they're trying to say. I think I might, but they're not doing a good job of it. And then every time I think I figured it out, they've fucked it up and they've moved on and they've done something else. And I will be very self-congratulatory here, because and you know, like, I'm a smart guy, you're a smart guy, we've been doing this for a long time, I watch a lot of television, I watch a lot of movies, I'm well versed in tropes, I'm well versed in cliches, I'm well versed in storytelling technique, you are too, and I just keep coming back to, like, I'm glad people are enjoying it, but
I don't know why.
This right, I don't know why, and like, this isn't very good. And there are things about it I like, and I am still watching it because on the whole, episode to episode, I find the show enjoyable. But it's at the point when you start thinking about it that it falls apart. I actually think that the show that this compares the most to is Star Trek Voyager, frankly. Like, because I enjoy Star Trek Voyager episodes while I'm watching it, and then you start thinking about it and you're like, oh wait, that actually doesn't really hold up to any sort of critical analysis. And I feel that way about Star Trek Discovery.
I find I am really liking Voyager. It's not DS9, it's not Next Generation, but it's a I really I have been enjoying it for the most part. And I think even after season one, I was kind of enjoying it, even if I had some reservations. But I did not like Discovery. I don't know. There's just something slightly off-putting about it. And maybe I am just at that age where I don't like new things, and maybe I just like 90s Trek. I mean, that could very much be a thing. That could just be the version of Trek that I resonate with. I'm really curious to see my thoughts on Enterprise.
Yeah, because
I just didn't like this.
And that's fair. I mean, like, I think I liked it more than you did.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, we just spent 45 minutes, like, yelling about Star Trek Discovery. But there are things about it I like. I can see things about the show that I enjoy. You know, I think Michael Burnham's an interesting character. I think Sinequa Martin Green is doing a really good job. There are a lot of people online that are saying, oh, she's such a terrible actress. And I'm like, please don't criticize people's acting. You don't know anything about acting. Like, I don't criticize people's acting unless it's really bad, because I don't know anything about acting. She's doing a fine job. You just don't like the fact that a black woman is, like, the main character on this show. You should just say that. But at the end of the day, like, is it enough? Is there enough here? Would we even be talking about this show if Star Trek wasn't in the title? Would I even know this was a Star Trek show? I don't know. I don't know. And I think we just have to see what happens in the second season. Now, you're not going to hear that for a long time, but...
And I have to say, I'm glad we decided not to cover it weekly for the second half. I feel like there is a long...
Richard very much tried to convince me to go against that decision, and I was like, nope, it's not a good idea.
No, If on the one hand it feels unfinished, and I'm glad we recorded this wrap-up of the season, because that at least feels like we capped it, but it would have been increasingly, what the fuck was this episode? Why did we have to see this? What was the point of it? Oh, Lorca was from the Mirror Universe. Oh, Tyler is Voke. Oh, the Empress is pretending to be Giorgio on the... Why do we need to have... That would have been what every week would have been, and it would have gotten very tiring.
Yeah. I that's why I really wanted to not do weekly coverage of Discovery anymore, because I think that we need some distance from it. And like, even just a little bit of distance from the last, you know, few episodes of the season. We were recording this on Tuesday, February 12th, that you'll probably get it the next day or the day after, depending on when I find time to edit. But It is the case that I think that even having a little bit of distance from the episodes does help. And, you know, thinking a lot about the season as a whole and thinking about the episodes that I watched, it just helps having that little bit of distance. Now, we'll talk about what our plan is for Star Trek Discovery going forward at the end of this. But there are just two things I do want to – one thing I briefly want to touch on or mention, and then one thing that I think we need to discuss, which is something we mentioned at the very beginning of this wrap-up. So Clint Howard makes an appearance. Good job. I like that. He was a Star Trek alumnus all the way back to the original series in one of your favorite episodes, The Corbinite Maneuver.
Oh.
So that was nice to see him. I'm glad that he's still getting work in the Star Trek universe. And the other thing is, of course, the elephant in the room, the Enterprise. Why is it there? What are they doing? I honestly don't know. It was like, after I criticized all their fan service, like, I loved it. Like, I don't care. Like, it's just like, I knew they were going to show the Enterprise at some point. I was extremely worried about what it was going to look like. And I was happy with the way it looked. They updated it to fit into the like look of the ships, the more detailed look of the ships. But they did not change any of the proportions. It still had the red caps on the nacelles. It still has the you know, dish in the front. It still has the little red marks on the sides. I mean, I was happy with it. I don't know how you feel about it. You're not a ship guy like me, but whatever it means for the second season, I have no idea. Why was the Enterprise having a distress 30 seconds out from Earth? I don't know, but there it is. And, you know, I don't know what it's going to mean for the second season, but I enjoyed that little moment of it at least.
Well, I'm glad someone did. No, I I mean, when they started on the coming up and it's like NCC-17, I'm like, oh God, they're going to do it. Oh God. Okay. Okay. This is what this ending is going to be. And again, it feels to me like a, come on, you have to see what's going on. You're going to see young Spock. Don't you want to see young Spock? Isn't it going to be exciting to see Michael Burnham and young Spock? And it's like, all right, I'll watch it. I'll find out what happens. But you know, what could be going on?
But you won't
on?
Be happy about it.
No, I am not.
Well, there's a lot of speculation about whether or not Spock is actually going to be there, because this is, I think, 2 years after the Cage. So, of course, Spock was on the Enterprise then.
Okay.
Is he on the Enterprise now? I don't know. I think that they did say it, or at least strongly imply, that Spock does serve on the Enterprise. So there's that. And this leads into my caveat. So I already said my hopeful piece about the second season. My caveat with the second season, or my fear with the second season, is that they still have the wrong storytelling instincts. Because one of the things that Kurtzman has said in an interview that I saw that was released after the season finale aired was, we know we have to tell you why Spock has never mentioned Michael Burnham. And I'm like, please don't.
No, we don't like, have we, to. You don't have to tell me.
We don't care. Like, does anybody remember Cybok from Star Trek V? Like, Spock doesn't talk about his personal life. End of story.
Journey
That's
to
fine.
Journey
That's
to
all the explanation you need.
Journey to Babel. Kirk has not heard mention of Spock's father or mother. He doesn't know that who Sarek is in the world. Like, he doesn't know. Well, I mean, he knows who Sarek is, but he doesn't know the relationship. Like, yeah, Spock does not talk about his personal life. There is no reason that we can retcon that as saying, well, nobody asked. And that's it. That's
right.
All we need to
right.
know. Nobody
and
has
I'm
ever
just,
asked. If there was a moment in canon where Spock said, I have no siblings, period. Certainly there is nobody named Michael Burnham in my life. Yes, we have to retcon that, but we don't.
Right, right. And that's the thing is, I mean, like, there was even that line that people were throwing around from the Tholian web where I think Chekhov asks Spock, has there ever been a record of a mutiny on a Starfleet vessel? And Spock says, absolutely no record of any such event. And of course, the end of this season retcons that, because of course there is no record of it because it was expunged and Burnham was Burnham was pardoned. But I think the other little part of that I really like is that it's Spock talking, and so the little like playing around with words there where he's like absolutely no record of any event like that. I think in the back of my head I'm thinking, you know, he's kind of going, well, I'm throwing some shade on my half sister.
he particularly would be nothing. There is nothing here. Nobody named Michael Burnham has ever committed mutiny. What? You didn't say that? Oh, sorry. you know, it's saying like, no, I totally am not. I don't know. It's a little too specific of a denial in that context.
Yeah, I like it, though. I just think it feeds into Spock's personality a lot. And that's, you know, but that's why I'm afraid for the second season, because that kind of thing where it's like, we need to explain why Spock has never, like, you don't have to explain that, actually, and please don't even try. Like, just leave it alone.
Like, they don't realize that prequel thinking sucks and everybody makes fun of it at this point. Like, it's the reason everybody makes fun of the Star Wars prequels, because...
Yeah.
You know how initially they were supposed to have a little boy on with the Wookiee planet at the end, and you would, you know, that would be Han Solo. So we have his origin, and everybody rightly realized that was a terrible idea. Learning why Spock has never said Michael Burnham before is like showing us child Han Solo, or making a Han Solo prequel movie even.
Boy, they would never do that. All right. Well, I think we'll call it an episode. We've been talking for a lot longer than we said we were going to. I did just want to mention, though, that the plan for Star Trek Discovery going forward. So we mentioned this before, but some people still have questions about it. So if you are listening to this and you have made it through this entire wrap up podcast, you're obviously interested in our thoughts on Discovery. So I will repeat it again. We obviously did not do live coverage of the back half of the first season. We have no intention of covering the second season live. I don't even know where we're going to be at that point. I think we're going to be in Enterprise, but who knows, because the second season isn't coming out until some vague time in 2019. But it were just fitted in with the regular continuity of Star Trek. And, you know, after we get to the very end of Star Trek, and if Star Trek Discovery is still on the air, who knows what we'll do at that point, but we'll have to figure that out when we get there. But that's our plan for season two, at least. So don't look for podcasts on season two for, you know, a while, because we're not even going to be close to being done at that point, I don't think.
And it also...
so that's going to be our plan.
Well, it also has the nice benefit of that lets us stall the question of what to do when we finish all the Star Trek.
That is true as well. We don't know, so... All right. Well, thank you very much for listening to this, and keep listening to the regular Trekabout. Our Voyager podcasts are fun. We're enjoying it. And if you liked Discovery season one, we're really happy you liked it, and we're sorry we didn't, but we have to tell you what we think, because that's what we've made our podcasting career on.